everyone. Welcome to episode 702 of Long Box Heroes, the Lamborghini of comic book podcasts. I'm Todd, along with Joe. How are we doing, Joe?
I'm doing good. You got to come in hot on that opening. You know, build the momentum to like start high and then come down.
A crescendo, you want?
Yeah.
I'll have to do that. I was in another world there for a second. So
fantastic.
So how are we doing?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk about comic book stuff. You know, off air, we were kind of readjusting our respective pull lists for the coming month here. And, you know, I still get a lot of comics, but, you know, we're not including the dollar amounts anymore. And that'll never happen again.
No, I don't like to know what's coming out of my pocket for comics.
Mm.
I've trailed back a lot, though, that I will admit.
Yeah.
And I don't willy-nilly buy, like, you know, it seems to be it's the lifetime of financial responsibility for me for here on out, it seems. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I will say, you know, we talk about it every week, of course, with Todd and Joe have issues, but the Secret Six Omnibus is the first big purchase, treat myself purchase, and double dip purchase in a long time.
See, I guess I'm not as responsible as I thought. This will be my Secret Six will be one of my three omnibuses for 2024.
There you go.
One will be, and it's not a double dip, this one. Justice League International Omnibus Volume 3. That's a quadruple or a quintuple dip for me. I have that in hardcovers, soft covers, individual issues, omnibuy. They do an absolute. I'm buying it. So I'm getting the Secret Six. And then they're doing the Hitman Omnibus. And I'm like, that's a top 20, like, series for me. So I'm grabbing it. But after that, I think I'm going to be super responsible.
I was going to say 10 years ago, maybe like 12 and a half years ago.
I'm coming off hot the Question Volume 2 Omnibus. So I guess there's a few more omnibuses than I thought.
Yeah.
Would you like to know what's on the show this week, Joe?
I was just about to say, what's on the show this week, Todd?
Should be a short show. In news, DC Pride comic honors a creator and is also the debut of a creator at DC. AIR Patui. X News. We have the Rob Watches back this week, Joe.
Wait a minute. Did you say X News?
Yes, X News.
Like the former news or like news about the X-Men?
Like news about the X-Men.
Oh, my goodness. What's going on?
I don't know. That's usually something we don't cover since we had the Mutant Minute back in the day, Joe.
I remember the Mutant Minute.
Right. The latest edition of My Walk Down Lois Lane with our good friend Becky. This one is weirdly related to Dobie Gillis, maybe? what we read last week, which was Action Comics 1063 and Avengers Twilight number 4. What we're looking forward to this week, Todd and Joe have issues where we reread Gail Simone's Secret Six in its entirety, and this is Secret Six number 5 from the original miniseries. And we don't have any TV talk, but we're going to discuss newly announced release dates for some upcoming things, especially Joe's favorite TV show.
Well, I haven't even seen the new Star Wars. Oh, you mean the other one.
Yeah, the other one that shall not name, you know. You forget yourself, sir. Calm down.
I do. So this year, DC has announced they're doing two different Pride books. Mm-hmm. This summer, typically they do one, which is like a big creator jam issue, which we will get to shortly. But they are doing a separate one specifically honoring the creator Rachel Pollack, who passed away at the end of last year, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And again, she was writing stuff, of course, that I wasn't, you know, she was writing stuff that I wasn't reading at the time. But primarily, she is known as the creator who took over Doom Patrol after Grant Morrison left.
Right.
And at the time, if you say those are some big shoes to fill, that is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she passed away about a year ago this month, I think it was. But also she gets credit. You know, she did a bunch of other Vertigo stuff and those sort of things. Excuse me. But she's also credited with putting into comics the first transgender superhero. Now, again, putting the first transgender superhero into a comic book, maybe in 2024, doesn't sound like that big of a deal. But we're talking about a comic from 1993?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure on the date.
So we're talking almost 30 years ago. So to say that Rachel was on the cutting edge of, you know, comics is an understatement. And obviously, Rachel, along with a lot of other creators, got their opportunity to do so because of Vertigo, which is why I think a lot of folks miss Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that, but go ahead.
Right. But she was always like a big proponent of gay and lesbian and trans rights, even going all the way back to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So for DC to like devote a special in celebration of her is like huge.
Right. Yeah. An honor, you know, as they should.
So definitely check that out if you never checked that stuff out. And I'll definitely be checking it out only because, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, you and I typically run on the colder end of things mm-hmm. when it comes to Grant Morrison stuff.
Right.
But like, you know, the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol had such a stigma, had such a whatever to it, positive or negative. To follow that book seemed like an unenviable task, both as a creator and as a reader.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we were discussing this at the shop like last week. I don't know if you were there. I think DJ might have been, where we were discussing you never want to be the guy after the guy, whether it's in comics or sports. You know what I mean? It's like you always want that buffer to be there. And when you do follow and you do it well, you know, that to me, it's like, you know, a bigger thing because it's so you're always compared. You're always compared. But good for her.
Right. And then the other main DC Pride book that's coming out this year is the typical fare where they're doing a lot of the, you know, LGBTQ plus creators, doing some of the LGBTQ plus characters. And there's even a story in there by Phil Jimenez about himself.
Okay.
Which is pretty interesting. But this is going to be the first time that Al Ewing works for DC.
Interesting.
Yes.
I will also say Phil Jimenez is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet at a con.
Oh, absolutely.
Just so nice. One of my favorite things about him was when he does, I don't know if he does them anymore, but he used to do like little free sketches or sketches at a certain price. And he would like only five people are getting sketches. So you'd stand five deep in line. When somebody would come, he would stop, get up, come around the table, greet them, shake their hand, say, I'm only doing five sketches. These are the five people. You're free to wait. Maybe you'll get another one, but I can't promise it. But if you have any signatures, come to the front of the line, and I'll get them before I finish the sketch. Such a class act. Loved Phil Jimenez.
So, yeah, that's the hook for me, that he's getting to write, like, you know, his kind of own story in this.
Right.
But the Al Ewing story is going to be about Blue Starman.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I think Starman's making a slight comeback, Joe.
If I know my Gazintas correctly, Todd, and I do, this year is the 30th anniversary of the famous James Robinson Starman run.
That's right. And in this month, or is it next month's preview? I don't know which it is, DC's. He's going to be on the cover of one of the variant JSA covers by Tony Harris. Whether or not he's in the book, I don't know. But Tony Harris is like, look, you know, he's on the cover. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if we're getting him back.
Yes.
Sorry, we're off topic, but go ahead.
No, it's okay. So the Pride books, like I said, I'm glad that DC is treating them as not just we're filling a quota and putting out a book because.
Right.
That they're actually doing interesting stuff with them, getting big name creators on them, doing interesting things with the Pride books this year. Not to say that they haven't done things with them in the past, but this year feels kind of like bigger than the previous years.
And they, it's a little different. Remember when they had the ethnic issue covers,
mm-hmm.
and it was all them making food and it didn't go over well. So this is a much bigger and better step up from that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now with one hand giveth, the other hand maybe taketh away. So I'm not really sure, you know, obviously this is just a rumor and innuendo story, but it's a story that was making the rounds last week. You know, I wasn't really sure on how to tackle it when it had come out. That's why we didn't mention it last week. But with the most recent issue of Batman, the Chip Zdarsky book, I think it was actually 2 issues ago, because like for some reason, like it was on like a weekly schedule for a little bit there.
Which has me completely thrown off, but yes.
Yeah. It was issue 143. There was art in the issue by Andrea Sorrentino, who has done a lot of work at Image, primarily on a lot of Jeff Lemire books.
Yep.
So Andrea Sorrentino doing the art in this. It's a Joker story, so it's like taking place during like 3 different timelines. It's all wonky, it's all crazy. And I just thought, like, hey, it's Sorrentino's art's a little wonky and crazy to begin with, and this is just because of the Joker story, maybe it's a little bit more wonky and a little bit more crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, this online writer by the name of James Leach did just a little cursory digging, and he was maybe able to kind of point out that maybe some of this art was not completely AI-generated, but definitely AI-enhanced.
Right.
Now, I will say, since the story has come out and it's been covered in a couple places, neither Chip Zdarsky or Sorrentino have come out to address it, confirm, or to deny it.
Right.
Now, there was a big dust-up a little while back where Hasbro, Wizards of the Coast, Magic the Gathering came out and explicitly said that we will never use AI-generated art on any of our cards, and then within, like, hours, people found all the AI-generated art on the cards.
Right. And I think, too, like, remember Secret Invasion, the miniseries, the Disney Plus one?
Yes.
They used AI for the opening credits.
Yes.
But go ahead, sorry.
And their excuse was, you know, it was supposed to be a little bit more, you know, it was supposed to give that feel of, like, weirdness or uncertainty or unknown, that sort of thing, right? They made an excuse for it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of torn on this. Under normal circumstances, I lean to the camp of AI art stinks.
Right.
And it's a detriment, and it's essentially stealing work of other people and co-opting it for your own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to play around with it and have fun, you know, one of my podcasts that I listen to, they recently did a bit on their episode where they had ChatGPT create an episode of their podcast.
Yeah, that seems to be like the rage with all like shows and stuff like that. It's ChatGPT, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, the AI generated stuff, the ChatGPT stuff, you know, a couple weeks ago when I was on the cruise, Adam and a friend of mine and a friend of Adam's put together like phone calls that were ChatGPT AI generated of wrestlers calling in to trash talk me, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some of them sounded better than others, and the art, like I said. But I think when it comes to art, I remember over the summer there was a big thing about this guy's like, oh, look, I created this Batman comic from AI. And then every artist worth his salt picked it apart and just said, like, the hands are all wrong, which AI could never get. Here's them blending, like, Brian Boland and Mike Allred and this person and this person's art, and it just looks like a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say I don't want to support AI-generated art, but if Andrea Sorrentino decided to do AI-enhanced art... I hope that he's aware of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I hope that he got the rest of the creative team to be okay with it. And I hope that he got DC to be okay with it, right?
I'll say this. I don't think the comic companies actually care. Because if they could tomorrow use AI art to draw and or write stories, writers and artists would be a thing of the past at comic companies. Because it's a way to save money. With all that, I'm with you. Because I remember when digital art was a dirty word, you know, not on paper. And I was like, all right, that's different because technically you're still creating it from whole cloth on a, you know, Wacom tablet or whatever. So now when you hit, it's my art and I'm AI enhancing it. If you're only taking from your artwork, then is that okay? Do you know what I mean? Like, because you're only robbing from yourself.
Yeah.
But if it's taking from, it's like the slippery slope. Where's the line? Do you know what I mean? Like, and like I said, if we find out Sorrentino comes out and says, I did it, but all that the computer ever did was steal from my artwork, so what does it matter? Who's it hurting? But I don't know.
And again, it gets into like a slippery sort of thing with it, right?
Murky area.
Yeah.
Now, if you're swiping from somebody else, if you're using somebody else's work completely, that's wrong. Like, that's, I don't truck with that, but. Like you said.
And the guy, James Leach, goes into a very lengthy, you know, comparison. Right. And he's like, I just put into a search, you know, AI Batman Catwoman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, here's the picture that came up on the AI, and here's the picture that was used in the book.
Right.
So, and then he's posted, he's like, okay, you know, we're comparing this to some art that Sorrentino has done, not in books, but on Instagram posts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, here's this where it looks like brushwork, but here's where maybe it doesn't look like brushwork. Then here's a thing where it purposely looks like from scene to scene that they're purposely trying to hide the hands because the hands don't usually come out well, right?
Right.
A lot of it is like brush strokes and things around the hairlines and whatnots.
Mm-hmm.
And then specifically referencing some panels, where it looks like, you know, Ben Affleck looking Batman. But again, that's not that big of a deal because so many other creators use whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they put in to an AI search, specifically Ben Affleck Batman kissing Catwoman. Her hair is a white wavy bob, and like the first seven of the eight searches that came up looked almost exactly like the panel to a T that was in the book.
Right.
So again, if he's ripping himself off, I guess no one's got a leg to stand on. But the only thing is, as I mentioned before, did he clear this with the artist? Did he clear this with the penciler? Did he clear this with the editor? I know that you said that DC and Marvel don't themselves care, but I know if I'm a writer and a guy who is a very well-known artist and Andrea Sorrentino is doing my book and he's AI-ing around it, I'm like, come on, it's Batman, you can't give me like the full thing.
No, I'm with you, and I just don't want you to think that I'm defending it. You know what
I
mean?
No, I know you're not defending it. I think you're just like making a point, I guess.
Yeah, because like I'm saying, there's different versions, but I'm not for it. I think it's lazy and, you know, yes, blah blah blah. I mean, it's less than, remember when everybody was making fun of certain artists, I won't mention his name, that he was just lightboxing, you know, magazine ads for what he was doing. And he ended up like admitting, he's like, yeah, I do it. It's quicker. And I'm like, ooh, okay. You know, like, all right. Can't you draw it freehand? You know, but either way.
Anyway, hopefully this is something that gets addressed or talked about or whatever in the future. But last but not least, Todd, as you mentioned, the announcement came out this past weekend at South by Southwest. A new beginning for the X-Men titles. We've got three core ongoing books. We've got X-Men, by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman. That's a great creative team. I like Jed McKay's stuff on the current Avengers book. I know a lot of other people have suggested his Moon Knight and his Doctor Strange is really good. But again, it's X-Men, you know?
Tough to get into.
Yeah. But they've announced a new title called The Exceptional X-Men. Mm-hmm. It's written by Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero. Again, creative team that's making the rounds lately. Again, I'm familiar with them. So again, it's X-Men. You know,
I don't know, Joe. Not grabbing me. I'm two out of three. They're
0-2.
Yep, 0-2. I don't know. Can three grab me? Let's see.
So Uncanny X-Men, the legacy title, the one that you could number back to 1963. We got David Marquez on art.
Okay.
I like David Marquez's art. It's nice. It's fancy. Mm-hmm. It's everything you want it to be. And it's written by Gail Simone.
All right, I'm buying an X-Men book.
Yeah, this was like one of those worst kept secrets in all of comics.
Yep. And I'll say, it takes a lot to get. I don't know the last time I bought an X-Men book proper. Because we've discussed X-Factor doesn't count for, like, with Peter David and stuff like that. Because it kind of wasn't, like, an entrenched X-book. But, like, an X-Men X, it might have to go back to Executioner's Song, Joe. That's how long ago it's been since I bought an X-proper book.
So, okay. There was a... I think I did Astonishing X-Men. I did the Jason Aaron Amazing X-Men.
Okay, I did that, yes.
That might have been the last time I bought one.
Okay, see, now maybe I'm kind of going for, because I remember doing the Jason Aaron X-Men, and I jumped off because, didn't he only do like five issues?
He only did like the first five or six issues.
There was like the Nightcrawler run, and I was like, I always feel like those are mini-series. And because I bought, there was a Fantastic Four run, or at least a Fantastic Four or something, and they crossed over with X-Men. So I bought two X-Men titles. These are all things that I don't count because they're not monthly on my pull list. That Amazing X-Men might be the closest, though. But Gail somehow is going to button hook me, man.
Yeah, and like I said, if we're counting Amazing X-Men, and I am, that was kind of like the wrap-up to what... And again, like, I guess you can argue and even say that, like, Jason Aaron writing Wolverine, or Jason Aaron writing the Wolverine and the X-Men school book, or whatever it was, right?
Do you count Mark Rucker writing a Cyclops book?
I do. So...
See, I get you because it's weird to discuss whether it's an X. See, I sort of think sometimes like a single X character is much different than the X books. I feel like with a single X character, you don't have all the weight of the backstory of X-Men.
Yeah.
You can tinker with it. But when I get into an X book, they usually are very like, you know, history heavy. And then, you know, eventually it's like a Bat book or a Spider-Man book. We are going to have a super multi crossover by four issues in.
We better not.
I think we're going to. Those three books are definitely going to tie in, but it's a matter of when. But I'm going to get the Gales and see how it goes.
Yeah, like I don't count the Mike Allred, Peter Milligan, X-Force, X-Static, Excellent as an X-Men book.
Right.
Because that's more of a Peter Milligan... Mike Allred book than it is an X book, right?
Right, it's its own animal. So it's like knowing whether something's someone's first appearance. We know it when we see it. It's whether or not an X book is an X book. We can't explain it, but we know it when we see it.
Right, but I'm going to count Wolverine and the X-Men as the last X book that I bought, and that would have been 10 years ago.
Okay.
Because granted, it was just more or less a continuation of the Wolverine and Weapon X stuff that Jason Aaron was doing in the main Wolverine book. Mm-hmm. And the book was essentially Wolverine is in charge of the Xavier school. That's about as Wolverine as a book as you're going to get. Or that's about as X-Men book as you're going to get, right?
Yep.
It's a guy who runs a school for mutants and they go on adventures.
That's why I don't count X-Factor, where Jamie Maddox runs a detective agency right. for 50 issues. It's like, okay, it ties in with House of M, but begrudgingly.
But I think those books don't come out till the summer.
That's fine. I can get ready. You know what? I could probably drop a couple of Marvel books to make some room.
Well, let me see your list, and we'll look at the publishers starting alphabetically.
Right.
You know, obviously, if we're talking X-Men and we're talking about creators and such that would get you to read a book, it would only be fitting to mention maybe a creator that would get you not to read a book.
Ask not for whom the Rob trolls. The Rob trolls for thee. And now, the Rob Watch.
So, of course, it's time for the Rob Watch, and it'll be a nice limited edition Rob Watch this week. So, as the announcements came out about these X-Men books, of course, the Rob has been kind of tiptoeing around that the X books need, like, a refreshing, and he's kind of been critical of the Hickman run, and current run and everything else like that. So when the announcements came out this past week, people are posting in the Rob's Facebook group, and I tell you, that's a hot place to be.
Mm-hmm. As long as you're quiet.
The Rob replied and said, "I'm not involved with any of these books, and I won't be commenting."
I'm sure he won't, Joe.
Now, normally, I'm a little bit behind on the Rob's podcast, of course. And typically when there's been a good episode or something like that, I typically plug it, let you know what's going on with it. But I'll let Rob himself plug this week's episode of his podcast. New Robservations, the 20-year shift, comics and pop, your first team comic book all-stars of 2004 are easily identifiable. Who fills their shoes today? Note, for the delusionals in this group.
Oh, boy.
These are the five best-selling talents of 2004. Please refrain from sharing your wish list as those who you wish qualified as top-selling talents. Mm-hmm. Try to use reason and facts. I have never, never ever often, seen someone who is so contentious with their own audience than the Rob.
What?
Calling his own fan base the delusionals.
Joe, but those, come on, not everybody in that group is a fan. Some are there just a troll, and those are the only ones he's talking to. Because if someone praised him for 17 sentences and then disagreed with him for one sentence, obviously the Rob would not drop the hammer. No.
Oh, my goodness. I bought two copies of your latest book. I've been a fan since Hawk and Dove. You know, I watch your Whatnot streams. I don't always agree with your page layout. Banned! I would have asked for a refund on my two books that I bought.
He is tough, Joe.
But I will say, behave. But if you can get into Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond on Facebook, it's well worth your time.
I may have to try that one. Keep my head down. I will say, though, that this, because when I got the notes today for our show, there was no The Rob Watch. And then just before we started, I was given the Iggy we were going to have one. And I was like, oh, see, you listeners might not know, but in the span of a week, this is my second The Rob Watch from Joe. The first one was a small, tight-knit group at the local comic shop. And let's just say the famous phrase of, boy, Joe was on one, was used after you left.
Oh, somebody put a nickel in Joe today.
Yes. It was one of those where Joe's usually like, nope, I got to go. I got stuff. I got to get back to the wife. I got to bring this. I got to do that. And I mentioned the Rob, and you just leaned up against the back issues And an hour and a half later, the nickel was still going, Joe.
It might have been that chocolate glazed donut and jumbo iced coffee I had 20 minutes prior.
I don't know. I think even without that, the Rob just brings it out of you. And I was mentioning stuff before you got there. It was almost like I was priming the pump, Joe. And you got there. And I told everybody there. I was like, and I said, I'm getting this wrong. Joe has the receipts. That was the actual term that I used. And I was like, what about this? And you're like, well, give me a second. And you do that thing where you shift your body and you get your, like, over dramatically move your body and you get the phone out and you're like, let me read these things. And you're scrolling and you're scrolling. And then you left and Becky was like, riled him up. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I didn't rile Joe up. Joe riled Joe up.
Hearing me on the podcast, reading the Robster recaps, is the tempered, even-handed version of me covering the Rob.
Mm-hmm. The caffeine-sugared version is much better, though.
If you want the more unadulterated little blue version, it's got to be live and in person.
I'll tell you, there was a part of me that almost hit record on my ringtone maker. There was a part of me. I was like, this could be another $100 tier on the Patreon.
Well, again, I'll just mention this. You know, it's not time for plugs, but we have the Patreon show coming up next month. It's April 1994. The Youngblood books are back at Image.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 3-page, small type, 4-column interview in there with the Rob.
Right. And I know, like, you've bringing it up to me, like, off mic, and I'm like, I don't even know what's in there, but Joe's all excited for it. Please have a jumbo coffee and a donut before you record.
I got to see when we record. Oh, so that's, well, again, we don't talk about the recording schedules for next month until we get there. That might be a weird recording
schedule. I'm easily confused because I will ask you 17 times before we record.
Yeah, that one might have to be a different day, but we'll get there. We'll worry about April's Patreon show after we record this weekend's Patreon show. How about that?
Fair enough.
All right. No conventions this weekend. Save your money. Go sign up for the Patreon. You know, figure out if you're going to spend your August weekend in Uncasville, Connecticut, or Rochester, New York. It's up to you. Those are your only two choices. But, of course, you can certainly check out stuff over at soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. Anytime, any of the shows go live. You can certainly find them on their own individual websites. You can certainly find them in the podcatcher of your choice. But, of course, one-stop shop for all the shows, soontobenamednetwork.com. And that, of course, includes this show that you're listening to now, Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark, all the wrestling shows that we have, Final Wrestling Place, We Need Wrestling, At Odds with Wrestling, Wings on Wings, Puzzle Warriors 3, Profane Arguments. I hear there's a competition for another porch show on the network.
Is there?
There certainly is. You would know this if you listen to a podcast on the network.
Oh, okay.
Someone would be attempting to ladle your warmth, as it were.
No.
I think somebody might have been buttering you up in the Discord so they could sneak in and steal porch talk from you.
Listen, if they want my seat on the porch, they're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead hands.
There you go.
I'm just saying. And I do listen to the podcast, Joe. I really do. I listen to At Odds. I only have 283 to get. They're in my queue.
All right.
And then as soon as I start them, I'll let you know.
Perfect. It wasn't on At Odds.
Okay. All right, let me write something down.
All right. Make a note for yourself.
All right, you keep going.
And anytime any of these folks show up on any other podcast, of course, you could certainly find it over at soontobenamednetwork.com. And that'll be in the show notes with this episode, just like information about some of our friends and the stuff that they're doing in and around the world of comics. go check out Mike Sterling's blog over at progressiveruin.com. Mike has been a 30-plus retailer over on the West Coast, one of my favorite, one of the most successful retailers that I know. You can go check out our friend Kevin over at HellionsTeam.com. He is holding down the upstate New York area. You can check out Rick Williams, the Chop Shop, over at FreeKarateChops.StoreEnvy.com. I'm doxing everybody here. He's more in the New England area than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Sandberg's Jupiter. You can go get that at his Indiegogo. It's a la carte. You can get it all the bells and whistles right down to just the standard issue itself. Chris Runt's Battle Monsters self-published book of his own doing. It was kickstarted. You can get the digital version directly from him at fortressofcomicnews.com. Our good friend Davey of the band Cave People has his own digital and print self-published comics that you could pick up over at cavedomaincomics.com. And of course, if you do not have a comic book store in your area, or you do not have a good comic book store in your area, let our store be your store. Comics on the Green. I have the Facebook page linked up. And wouldn't you know who won the pony? Another barrel of Silver Age Key issues were dropped off on the store's doorstep this past week as well.
Right. I hope he gets them displayed soon.
I'm still in a bidding war over that can of antifreeze that was in the trunk of the car from 2 weeks ago.
I know the anonymous bidder who's against you. His name might rhyme with Odd Ochre.
It doesn't matter because someone's going to snipe us at the last second anyway.
Right. You got sniped on antifreeze, but go ahead.
Sign up for the mail order subscription service. Get your books mailed to you weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly. And if you do, there's a chance you can get a sketch on the package from our good friend Becky, who we're going to turn things over to now for her walk down Lois Lane.
Welcome back to my walk down Lois Lane. Today we're going to talk about issue 18 from 1960. So let's dive in. Everyone at the Daily Planet is having their picture taken for yet another movie. Perry will be played by Clark Gable, Clark by Rock Hudson, Lois by Dolly Day, and Jimmy by Dobie Gillis. Remember that name for the end of this episode. A few days later, Lois's article about Dolly Day playing her is interrupted by a mousy girl named Mary Kenyon who wants a job and has articles to share. Perry tells her no, he only wants pretty professionals, and he kicks her out. Lois feels bad for Mary and offers to help her get a job. Can you see where this is going? Lois shows Mary how reporting in Metropolis is done, and she gets a job. Perry gives her an assignment about a boat, and while at the dock, Mary discovers an SOS in a bottle from a millionaire who was lost at sea and stranded on an island. Isn't that the plot of Arrow? Mary turns it into Perry. He sends Superman to rescue the guy and tells Mary Lois was working on that for months, so good job. Mary now has the adrenaline that comes with being an ace reporter in Metropolis and begins to get all the best stories by putting herself in harm's way, so she has to be rescued by Superman. Lois is not taking this well and accuses Superman of favoring Mary, but he tells her he saves everybody, so don't sweat it. There is a man trying to unalive himself by jumping off of the building across from them. Lois is yelling out the window, and Perry tells her to stop because Mary's got this. Mary notices he's standing on the building of the Institute for People Who Are Deaf and signals to him using sign language that Superman will be right there. They do not say sign language because this is 1960 and I'm not saying what they actually used. Lois is about to quit her job in defeat when she gets a phone call to meet up with a man who has a big story. When she arrives, she's kidnapped and thrown into a pit of water. She's about to drown, but just when she thought Superman doesn't care about her anymore, he rescues her and tells her he has a surprise for her. Turns out Mary is Dolly Day in disguise. You caught that too, huh? And was pretending to be a reporter as part of her method acting for her role as Lois. Lois's job is safe after all. So, Dobie Gillis, who does look like Jimmy Olsen if you Google him, is from a show called The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis that ran from 1959 to 1963. To sum it up, it's about a nerd who wants fame, money, and the ladies. The reason he was name-dropped in this issue is because DC released a comic based on the show that ran for 26 issues, and issue 1 came out 1 month before this issue of Lois Lane. Now that is what you call marketing. Tune in next week for more Lois.
Thank you very much, Becky. Continuing to delve deep into these weird tales of the 60s that get absolutely no play, coverage, or otherwise anywhere.
Right. It's funny too, because first of all, I just side note, anybody who's a method actor, you're the worst. That's all I'm going to say. So that's brought up in here. Method actors, I don't even want to deal with. But I like when she was kind of explaining this to me, and she's like, Dobie Gillis is in this, and he kind of looks like, you know, he kind of looks like Jimmy Olsen. And Dobie Gillis, I was like, slow your roll, Becky. Like, I used to watch Dobie Gillis on Nick at Night. I understand who he is. And then she goes to me, she's like, yeah, and she had, he had this other guy on it who was like his sidekick that was like a beatnik. And I kind of recognize him, but I'm like, you mean Gilligan? You mean Bob Denver Gilligan? And I was like, okay, I found that funny, because I was like, yeah, on those old TV shows, I'm going to kind of know. But I do like the fact that she ends up making like the reference that Dobie Gillis had his own comic. And here's a little thing that I ended up finding out when I did my research, that went on for like how many issues, like she said. But then DC reprinted those in a comic called Windy and Willy. And they had the original artist retouch stuff up so it didn't look like Dobie Gillis and Bob Denver and all the other characters. And they re-lettered it. So they took they just swiped the stories and changed them slightly so they wouldn't get sued by the Dobie Gillis people like years later. I'm like, I need to find all these Windy and Willy comics.
So, you know, obviously you mentioned Dobie Gillis was a staple of Nick at Night.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day. Now, prior to that, you know, and I'm younger than you, of course. I don't know when Nick and Knight started. It probably started when I was probably like 10 or 11, you know?
Right.
And Gilligan's Island was in heavy syndication. Like, you could watch, like, the entire run of Gilligan's Island in, like, 2 months across three different stations back right. in the day when there was 20 stations.
Mm-hmm.
It was just everywhere. So then Dobie Gillis comes on. And I was so confused as to why Gilligan
yep.
was on this other show, right?
Anytime I saw any of the Gilligan's people on any other show, it blew my mind.
I remember the day when I figured out as a little kid, Jim Backus was both Thurston C. Howell III and Mr. Magoo.
Right. I knew that early on, yeah.
And that blew my mind when I put those two pieces together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, as a tie-in for things that I'm interested in, Classy Freddie Blassie made a guest appearance on Dobie Gillis.
Oh, did he?
He certainly classy? Did.
Was he Classy Freddie Blassie on that?
He was on there as wrestling world champion Classy Freddie Blassie.
Wow, that just blows my mind.
Fred Blassie was like a big, like, you know, obviously, you know, in the later days when you would watch him in the 80s and so forth, and he was like the Hollywood fashion plate. Like, his career spanned back to the 50s. He was like a big deal wrestler in the California, and primarily only in California and Japan were the only two places that he wrestled. And like, he was best friends with Regis Philbin.
Okay.
When Regis was the sidekick on the Jack Parr show, because okay. Regis and Fred Blassie were good friends, Fred Blassie would be on the Jack Parr show like once a month.
Really?
Yes. He was like a regular guest because like if they couldn't get, because they were like this was pre Johnny Carson. This was like the days before What Is a Talk Show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like sometimes they just couldn't get guests, and they could always rely on Regis's good friend Classy Freddie Blassie to come on and like do some shtick or whatever it was, you know?
Right. The only thing, my claim to fame with Gilligan's Island, because that's where we came into, and I was talking with Gilligan's Island with her, I was like, because I loved Gilligan's Island. I was like, I was there. I loved Gilligan's. I loved when the Russian spies showed up. I watched when they got off the island, when the Globetrotters showed up. It was such a great show. And I loved it so much that I don't even have to look it up and know that the skipper's shoot name on the show was Jonas Crumby. And did you know that he had a seafood restaurant that he would like after the show kind of like went away? He didn't do much. It was called the Lobster Barrel. It was Skipper Alan Hale's Lobster Barrel.
Yes.
And he was kind of like the maitre d' and would like call people little buddy and everything like that. That's when you know your career hasn't panned out after Gilligan's Island.
He was also in one of his last roles.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a much maligned show on Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie Great Spider Invasion.
Was the movie not so great?
The movie was not so great. It was filmed in Wisconsin, and because they're from that area, they were like spotting all the landmarks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Hale plays like the chief of police or some nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets to do the Kelsey Grammer in Money Plane acting where he's just sitting for most of the time.
You mean chair acting?
Chair acting. Mm-hmm. And he says little buddy in the movie and they all collectively groan.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. Yes. And one last thing, the fact that Bob Denver was on the Great Space Knots, and I thought it was Hale who was the co-star, like that was a Mandela effect for me for years, but he was like somebody else. I always thought it was the two of them on that. And then they had the, what was it, Gilligan's Island in Space or something like that? Was a cartoon?
That was good. A cartoon, yeah, yeah.
Good times, good times. Did you know we became a Gilligan's Island podcast so slowly nobody even noticed?
I had that. I was maybe reading a little bit ahead in the script there. I apologize.
Okay.
And it was Giant Spider Invasion, not Great Spider Invasion.
Oh, then it wasn't so great. It was a giant.
So if I'm sure a lot of those Mystery Science Theaters are on YouTube. If you've never seen Giant Spider Invasion, Mystery Science Theatered, go out of your way. Check it out. It's a fun one.
Right.
So let's get into what we read from this past week, Todd. Where would you like to begin?
With old Gilligan's Island comics, but no. I'm going to start.
That's Todd Joe of issues next year.
Oh my God, fantastic. Do old TV shows like Hogan's Heroes and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
I'm going to start with the book I was looking forward to most. I think you too. Action Comics 1063, written by Jason Aaron, art by John Timms. Last we left, the whole world's been, you know, converted into Bizarros because of Bizarro using a magical spell, and only Superman's left and one other person. I think I can, you know, spoil it now. It was Joker. He was, you know, Bizarro'd. So the opposite of crazy Joker is sane Joker. So he ends up teaming up with Superman to, you know, stop Bizarro. And they end up doing this, a mind palace thing where, you know, it's the whole Earth and Superman's fighting Bizarro in it. And it's just great that the two of them are fighting because, like, Superman's getting his head handed to him and Bizarro's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And just some of the stuff that, like, the writing with Jason Aaron that makes Superman Superman, because at one point he punches him through the Earth, you know, in his mind palace. And it said, it's like, and you know, he's knocked through it and he's like, it hurts. Superman could scream for 1,000 years and it wouldn't be enough to adequately convey the pain. So instead he simply grunts and carries on. That's Superman, baby. He goes and spoiler alert, it's the conclusion of the story. Things are going to work out, but how they work out, and Joker helping Superman in the weirdest team up in the history of comics. And the fact that a very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, where he's being very nice and helpful and just being, I don't know the word I want to use, is disconcerting, being friendly and helpful. And it's very bizarre. And what's going to happen when everything goes back to normal? I don't know how to explain it. It's a weird dynamic that I never thought I would see. And it works so well. And you shouldn't make me feel sympathetic for the Joker for a hot second, but this issue does. I hate anybody who does that, like the Joker movie or whatever. It's like, we're going to falling down. We're going to make the Joker sympathetic. But in here, it works in the sense of the story, and we know it's not going to last forever. And then it's back to, you know, what we love about the Joker. So good. I love the storyline. It looks beautiful. The coloring on Bizarro, that light blue, just looks so good. And in the end, is Bizarro gone? Who knows? Maybe he'll come back. I would read Jason Aaron on Superman from here until eternity, but I think Joshua Williamson is taking over with a Brainiac crossover between Superman and Action here. But bring Jason Aaron back on Superman.
It was a great way to lead us into the crossover. If you're only getting one of the two Superman books, you want to get the second one. We're gonna give you 3 issues on Jason Aaron. Then we're gonna go you right into a crossover. You're sunk now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the Joker is here again, essentially Bizarro Joker, the sanest man alive.
Yep.
And so many of the dialogue bits in these 3 issues, and of course, culminating here. You talked about disconcerting with this Joker, and any iteration of the Joker is disconcerting. But right. Bizarro Joker, good Joker, sane Joker's dialogue, and the words that he uses that don't feel like Joker words. And but if our Joker said them, and I say our Joker, like mainline DC continuity Joker used them, they would be disconcerting.
Mm-hmm.
But when sane Joker says things like bugaboo and adorable,
mm-hmm.
it's disconcerting.
Joe, I figured out the word that I couldn't figure out what it was. A supportive Joker?
Yes.
Is spine-chilling.
A helpful Joker.
Yes. Like a Joker I want on my office team. That, like, that's bizarre. Oh.
But you had mentioned before, a big thing in this book is numbers. Mm-hmm. And very in this issue particularly, is numbers. And very rarely do numbers stick out to me. But mm-hmm. the use of numbers in this issue was such a thing for me. You had mentioned Superman screams a billion times, or whatever it was.
Right, for a billion years.
For a billion years. There's another bit in here where in the Mind Palace, as he's trying to fix Metropolis and therefore fix the world, Superman comments that he has failed in doing this 8 billion times.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else will know this, and once everything gets fixed, no one will. But Superman does. And right. that's what makes him Superman. That's mm-hmm. the thing that drives him, is the fact that in this instance, he failed 8 billion times, and he can never live that down. He can never let that happen again, sort of thing, right?
Right.
And then we have the bit where, you know, as he's fighting the Bizarro, and the Bizarro is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, in the Mind Palace, they specifically cite Superman dies 89 times in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And keeps coming back. Then after the explosion of the sun, and he comes back again, he gets killed 13 more times. The specificity of the numbers in this issue is something that has stuck with me so much. And it paints like such this picture. And the other good thing about this, and this speaks for the creative team, you know, obviously Jason Aaron, John Timms has the art on this. A lot of times when I read a story, I get caught up and I tripped up in my head of like, where is this taking place in the continuity? And Todd, I'll tell you, there's clues where this takes place in the continuity,
mm-hmm.
but I don't care where this takes place in the continuity.
Yep.
Because it's that good. It don't matter.
I'm less with that. That bothers me way less than you. But I could see what you're talking about in this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a really good book. I can see them collecting these 3 issues as like a little mini trade or something, or they might just do 6 issues. I would absolutely put these 3 out ASAP.
That one like prestige square bound 3 issue, like $7.99, whatever. You know what I mean? I don't know what number it would be.
It'd be $10.
Right. But some $9.99. Yeah. Like that. And the last number that was in this that jumped out at me, like you're talking about numbers. So I totally agree with you, is when Joker and Superman are talking. He's like, you're in your mindscape. And he's like, you're telling me your mindscape is an exact replica of the Earth. And he goes, listen, police officers work a beat, protect the neighborhood. Just so happened my beat covers 197 million square miles. I Googled that, Joe. That's the right number, just in case you were wondering. Just so you know. It's like 196 point whatever. But I'm like, you round up, I'm okay with that.
So the other book that we both read from this past week is Avengers Twilight number 3, written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Daniel Acuna. With the midway point in this story, Cap is assembling his team, and again, I think we could spoil it at this point. The big reveal from last month's issue. Issue 4. My apologies.
Right.
I grabbed the link for issue 3. I'm so, like, in the show notes. That's going to be fixed before the episode goes up, right?
Right.
Yes. but it's right on the cover of this issue. The person that they get is Thor. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now Cap is putting his team together. They have Tony Stark. They've built, like, a little robot suit for the head in the jar to walk around with.
Right.
And very rarely do I get a chance to say this, but Todd was right in that the Jarvis that is helping Jimmy Stark, Tony Stark and the Wasp's son, is the Red Skull. And I so bad wanted it to be revealed that it's like, okay, it's not the Red Skull, but he's saying he's the Red Skull. And then, like, he does stuff in this issue. It's like, no, he's clearly a Red Skull, right?
Right.
Now, obviously, Cap is getting together his Avengers, but Jimmy Stark and the Red Skull have their Avengers out there, and we get an interesting revelation about those Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of ties into maybe one of our news stories a little bit earlier on in the episode here. But this is going to be, like, the big come-together moment, because... maybe Jimmy Stark is going to have some armored help of his own in this.
Yep. And will Jimmy, you know, see the error of his ways? Or is he going to be, you know, a Red Skull ally? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You know,
like,
we get...
I could see it go either way at this point. You know what I mean? Like, if when you get angry enough at, like, your old man, like, maybe you'll, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Or is he going to be, like, at the end, like, see the light of, like, maybe I shouldn't hang out with Nazis, you know?
They leave those breadcrumbs there for you almost perfectly. And you get the bit where Red Skull is like, I'm your father. I'm the one who raised you. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this together for how many years? We can't let them stop us. We can't let a bunch of old men, a bunch of fossils, a bunch of whatever, stop us from creating the future.
Mm-hmm. And like, there's a bit in there, too, where, like, I forget if he says nobody dies today or whatever. And, like, they're like, the people around him are taught, like, this old fossil kind of saying. He's like, yeah, but when he says it, you believe it. Do you know what I mean? Like, whatever he says, like, he has a way about him. And then just some of the lines, like Zdarsky, like, when they spring a trap, and it, like, Thor's there, and he's like, we got you trapped. And he's like, you can't trap thunder. And I'm like, that's just such a cool line. Just such a great line. I'm really enjoying this this miniseries. So maybe we'll get a full on. Remember how they were doing the Old Man Logan universes?
Yeah.
And doing all the books. I could see down the line an Avengers Twilight, like what happened to all these characters. You know what I mean? Just milk Avengers Twilight for all it's worth at this point.
As if you got Chip Zdarsky on it, yeah.
Yep.
If you maybe revisit this world, maybe like once a year, once every 18 months with a new miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just saying, but, that's all.
Yeah.
I could see it's something that Marvel would do either way, even without Chip. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Does well and has a claim. It'll be like... Avengers Twilight, you know, Ant-Man, Avengers Twilight, you know, Peter Quill, kind of, you know.
Yeah. All right, so that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. We are currently all tied up.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Could go either way. Someone could pull ahead. Someone could go behind. We could tie. I'm looking at your list, and is the book you're looking forward to most? I won't hiss when I say it, but Cobra Commander number 3?
It is Cobra Commander number 3, yes.
Cool beans. Either lose or tie.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Shot in the Dark, I'm going to say the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Justice League vs. Kong vs. Godzilla number 6.
No, it's not. It's Nightwing. And we're getting ready to roll into what may or may not, because they're being very coy about it. Maybe Bruno Redondo and Tom Taylor's last storyline on, you know, like we're starting to roll into that. But there wasn't a lot that wowed me. And Justice Society of America 9 definitely wasn't one, because I feel that book has delayed those Jay Garrick and Alan Scott books.
It's so funny too, because the Wesley Dodd book came out no problem.
Right, because we finished it, you know, we didn't discuss it, but there was very barely any JSA thing other than one small tie-in, but I feel there's more, especially with Red Lantern in the Alan Scott stuff.
And I'll say this, looking at your, well, again, we could deal with your list when we deal with your list, and I got issues with your issues. Make a note for yourself. Just write down the word numbers.
Numbers. Okay. Did I put the wrong numbers?
Yes.
Okay. It happens.
And that's on me. But I'm surprised you didn't get the Ape book that's out this month.
You know what? I thought about it, but like the prices that they're putting, I'm trying to be responsible, Joe. I got Omnibuy coming up.
That's true.
And I did smell the rub. What was it called? The rub, because it's not the scratch, it's the rub and smell. Yeah. It smells like those banana runt candies, just so you know.
Not like the 3D glasses that you get at the baker at the Viewmont Mall for the
King Kong?
Mighty Joe Young or whatever it was.
Right, right. Wow, are you dating yourself and putting yourself in a specific area at the same time?
This has to be at least the 50th time we've brought that up on the podcast. Over 700 episodes of this show, 480 some odd shows of After Dark, right?
Right, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's right. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of the aforementioned After Dark, and of course, check out Todd and Joe Have Issues. We're currently rereading all of Gail Simone's Secret Six. We got through the Villains United stuff. We're into the first miniseries, which is technically the second miniseries by the same name. But again, the other one doesn't count because it's not written by Gail Simone. Anyway, art here by Brad Walker as well. And this is the penultimate issue of this current story arc. When we last left the Duke boys, I mean the Secret Six, Scandal walks in on... Knockout and Deadshot getting down to business.
Yep.
In a carnal way, if you will. And of course, this sends Scandal into a rage. And obviously, the way that Knockout and people of Apocalypse feel about being intimate, your carnal desires are very different than the way that us measly Earthlings do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those bits that I love so much, because I reread, you know, obviously reading this at the time, like, what a cliffhanger. And then, of course, when it comes back, and while this is going on, Scandal's just in a rage, and she's just beating the ever-loving snot out of Deadshot. He doesn't know how to react, of course, you know, obviously caught in a moment of vulnerability, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But as the battle is going on, two things to point out about the art, of course. You know, obviously everyone's in various states of undress, but they're certainly being kept modest by well-placed feathers from the pillows going around.
Groceries and baguettes and stuff.
Yes, yes. But because of how this all comes out, and that Knockout is confused that Scandal is acting this way, because, of course, there's a difference between... And again, it's the, you know, we're an all ages show and we're tiptoeing around it. Obviously, there's a much bigger difference to her and her people between sex and love.
Mm-hmm.
And in all the shots during this scene, Knockout, in a rare moment, several rare moments, is drawn as like vulnerable.
Yes.
And yes. That adds so much to this scene. in the fact that, like, the way that Scandal is drawn so hard and vicious, and Knockout is drawn as, you know, confused and hurt in a way that is much worse than the beating that Scandal is laying on Deadshot.
Right. I will say, and like you said, Knockout doesn't understand it. And this is something that always, like, you know, those little moments that stick out with you, and they're not, you know, the crazy fight moments. There's all those, like, little weird things. But when Knockout can't understand it, and Catman says to her, and this is one of the few times I'll do the quote, he's like, "Scandal, look at her. Just look. She doesn't even know why you're angry. You're killing her. Is that what you want?" And the art does convey that, that, like, Knockout's like, you know, kill him. I don't care. You know, if that's what you want, but kill me. It doesn't matter. I can't believe I broke this. And I was like, that is so good. And I'm going to tiptoe a toe around one other thing that I absolutely love is when Deadshot's getting his butt handed to him, and he's like, okay, he gets to his gun, which is the only thing that makes him dangerous because he's not a hand-to-hand fighter, and he has his chance to take the shot, and he doesn't, and he just goes, I'm going soft. And I'm thinking, like, double entendre, and that's all I'm gonna say, because Gale would go there. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I'll leave that dangle, but go ahead.
Another double entendre. So this is the thing that finally happens. This is the impetus. This is the event that causes Scandal not only to leave, but also to leave to go to her father, Vandal Savage, right? So the rest of the six are kind of licking their wounds after this. And it's at this point where we get kind of sort of the origin, or at least a little bit more information in regards to this iteration of the Mad Hatter. And I'll say it one more time this week, and I'll say it one last time next week, that I wish someone picked up on this iteration of the Mad Hatter, because he is awesome, he is dangerous, he is crazy, and they added so many different wrinkles to him that no one else had done before or after. They more so look at him as the Alice in Wonder pastiche, as opposed to a guy who perfected mind control by using hats.
Right.
So essentially what it is he reveals to them, Mad Hatter reveals to the rest of the six, that he listened to, or Scandal talks in her sleep. And as we've been seeing this, she, Scandal, has been visited in her sleep by Vandal Savage, and he has kind of picked up on what has been going on with her, knows that Scandal is going to go to her father, and that is what helps the six go there to try to help and rescue Scandal. It's also there where Scandal finally finds out the true plan, or confronts Vandal Savage about the plan, of course, to, you know, sire an heir to the Vandal Savage Empire. He really wants it to be with her, Scandal, and Catman. Catman, of course, a little taken aback when he finds out this information a little bit later on as well. But Vandal essentially says, like, I don't need you to be alive to get your reproductive organs. In a really good bit there. But again, the Mad Hatter stuff is, you know, obviously he used his mind control stuff, you know, to give people what they wanted. But then, you know, you read your bit, I'll read my bit, where he says, I realize I can cut out the middleman. And I could use the hat to make others happy, to bring me happy thoughts, when I could just hypnotize myself, and, you know, that would be okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially says, like, it's better than Spectrox. Believe me, I've tried.
Yep, that's a great line. 1,000 times better than Spectrox. And believe me, I've measured, Joe. Yes. And I do love that Deadshot's like, our secret weapon's a hat junkie. Yeah. And any other team, that would seem odd, Joe.
Yes. So, of course, we get the whole, you know, the big fight between Vandal Savage's crew, the six showing up. Of course, Dr. Psycho uses his mental whammy to try to get Deadshot to turn on the rest of the crew, But again, power levels. Mad Hatter is able to override and use his mind control stuff on Dr. Psycho. Again, supremely leveling him up in this issue in stuff that is never followed up on again. And maybe with good cause, because the issue ends with Cheshire stabbing him in the... Cheshire stabbing Mad Hatter in the back, taking him off his game, freeing Dr. Psycho's mind, and the six are essentially down to four as the issue ends.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I do like that I don't know if you mentioned was when Savage tells Scandal, like, yeah, all right, you don't want, before he even tells him, like, I don't need, you know, your permission, I could do what I want. He says, okay, you don't want Catman. That's who I wanted. Well, we could figure out somebody else. And she basically says, like, I figured it out and you forced my hand. She's like, who? And he's like, I've chosen, you know, for you. And it's Dr. Psycho. Like, and she's like, what have you done? And he's like, well, what if you get his powers? It's very weirdly worded, but it is strongly implied that he's going to, like, and I'm like, she hates, like, on top of it all, Vandal Savage might be a bad guy, Joe. I don't know. I don't have all the evidence in yet. The miniseries isn't over, but just this issue alone, horrible, horrible. I'm being facetious, but yeah, just so good. I love everything about this Secret Six miniseries. Can't wait to wrap it up next week, Joe.
Yep. And then we got the Birds of Prey stuff after that, and then the next big miniseries after that as well. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Or the big series. The ongoing. Right? Yeah, the ongoing. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out our store, where we can get shirts and pins and stickers based on the fancy show logo. I can get those out to you. Or shoot me a message and we could work out a deal, of course. Our TeePublic store is having a sale this weekend up until Sunday. 35% off. Designs inspired by this show, At Odds with Wrestling, Final Wrestling Place, the soon-to-be-named network itself. And you can get those designs on anything from cell phone covers to notebooks and everything else in between. You can also make any and all of your purchases through our eBay affiliate link. This page contains affiliate links for eBay. We may receive a small commission on purchases you make through these links. You could use these affiliate links anytime you want to buy anything on eBay and support the show at the same time.
Yeah.
And of course, the best way, the most fun way, the most rewarding way to you to support the show is to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/longboxheroes. As little as $1 a month, you are going to get two bonus shows a month from Todd and myself. One is Previewing the Past, where we look at 30 years ago this month's previews catalog. The other is Comic Book Oddities, where we look at some of the lesser known, more maligned, pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, canceled pilots, things of that nature. And this month, we're going to be talking about the TV movie event based on Malibu Comics, Nightman.
Oh, yeah.
It's Nightman.
Yes.
Also, on the Patreon, you're going to get full scans of those preview catalogs that we talk about, of course. $5 level is going to get you the shows that we just mentioned 2 weeks before everyone else, and it's also going to get you After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to the shows in the correct listening order.
Jokes make a lot more sense.
Yes. Last but not least, of course, there is no TV or movies to discuss this week, but there are TV and movie news to discuss, so we decided to put it here at the end of the show. We do have an official air date, at least for us people in the good old US of A, mm-hmm. for the new season of Doctor Who, because it now streams on Disney Plus.
Right. Can't wait. Did you tell your wife when it's coming?
I did, actually, and she's actually very excited about it.
Good for her. I'm glad she's a convert, Joe.
So it is going to be premiering Friday, May 10th. On Disney Plus, which is before it airs on BBC or any of the BBC streaming stuff on May 11th, which to heretofore was unheard of.
Yeah, I agree. Shocked me when I found out. You know who it shocked more, though, Joe? Everybody in England.
Well, listen, I don't know what our listener base is in England. We could certainly look at the the numbers, but you know what I say.
What do you say?
Move to the United States or, you know, I don't know, get Disney Plus or something, right?
As I always say and other people say, there's two types of people in the world. The people who use the metric system and the people who put someone on the moon.
Does Russia use the metric system? They didn't.
Everybody uses them. I think there's like one small country that doesn't use the metric system, and it's us.
Oh. We win, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, we were on the moon. Deal with it.
And it was officially announced today, you know, information, release date, that sort of thing. Speaking of Disney Plus, the next Star Wars series called Acolyte takes place before the prequels. You know, I don't know much about it. I don't know what this is inspired by.
Do you know what I know about it, Joe? The trailer came out today.
Right.
I didn't even know there was an Acolyte TV show coming.
Yeah, I saw the teaser poster the other day where it just shows like it says in an age of light, a darkness rises, and it has a lightsaber laying there. And, you know, the thing that's coming out of it certainly looks like blood, you know. Mm-hmm. And that starts up on June 4th. So like I said, we don't got much genre stuff until May 10th. Where we get hit with Doctor Who, followed by Star Wars Acolyte, followed by The Boys Season 4.
Right. June the 4th be with you. Star Wars.
Why did they not put this out on May the 4th? What's going on?
I don't know. They have Doctor Who. That's more important. And I hope that someone in here has an agency that protects. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
What?
You made this joke, Todd.
What? I'm all about agency, characters' agency, and protecting the younglings, Joe. I actually was hoping this was a prequel that we got to know all the younglings that got slaughtered by Anakin. Like, get to really know them before they're, you know, gunned down.
Speaking of which, there's a prequel. Do Gungans show up in this?
My God, if they want to print money, yes. I don't know, what do Gungans use for money? Like sardines, space sardines or something?
I think frogs or something.
I'm telling you, they really need to bring Jar Jar back, man, for like something.
We are overdue for, and we're, listen, I think isn't this year the 25th anniversary of the prequels?
I think so.
We are overdue for an ironic reawakening or reinvention or a something of Jar Jar Binks.
I'm hoping for like a TV show that's called like Gungan Style would be great.
Terrible.
And maybe a Watto, you know, TV show would be good too. Watto you up to? That would be a great title.
And if we're gonna do off shows, right? I don't have a title for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you remember from Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan's best friend, Dexter Jackster, who runs a 50s diner in Star Wars for some reason.
Alice in Space.
There you go.
That's Alice what I in want. Space,
but starring Dexter Jackster in his 50s diner in space.
Dexter, kiss my space grits.
There you go.
Their catchphrase.
All right, that's enough for this week, right?
I believe so. It was a short show.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I don't look at the time until I pull up the little thing to start doing our outro, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, everyone, thank you very much for listening. This was episode 702 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying thanks for listening, and we'll see y'all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a long box hero. The Rob is a long box hero. He gives us five stars.